Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Weather's cooling off, the action's heating up. We're here today with Peter John Cole. He's here to give us a fishing report from Central Alabama. Peter, how you been?
I'm good, Nick. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing good. I know we was talking some off air. I've been shooting some pigs, been getting ready. We got bow season opener coming in next week for us. I was just talking with old Andy Witten, and he turned me down for a podcast. He said he wasn't fishing no more until he killed that buck he'd found up there. So he sent me pictures of it, and I can't blame him. I wouldn't be thinking about fishing either if I had a buck like that on my camera.
Yeah, our guide group text, Andy said, I'm done, boys. He just count me out.
Hey, he sent me pictures of that deer, and all I could say was, hey, I understand. Good luck with him. Send me pictures once you got it.
Yep, I get it. Priorities, man.
No, it's always, I've said this before on the show, like fall, I struggle. My boss, he struggles with fishing in the spring because he's a big turkey hunter. I've never been a big turkey guy, but man, it's hard to fish in the fall, but I know that the bite is hot. It starts cooling off. And the few times I do go, I always catch well, but it's hard to stay out of the woods. But how's it looking up there in your neck of the woods?
Well, up here on the kind of the middle section, the Bibb County area and Shelby County area of Cahaba River, water is low. It's real low. It's real clear. You know, we ain't had any rain lately. But especially with the Cahaba, all the shoals, it really pockets the fish up. So they're a little bit harder to get that bite. You just got to be careful in how you work them and your presentations. But I mean, you just called it, the fishing's hot. Topwater bite is still rocking. Them rivet rolls, little frog imitations from John Lohr, those things are still killing it. I get double barrel poppers from Paul Terry, old Epic Boogeyman. He does some custom hand-painted double barrel poppers that are super, super hot right now. Chartreuse, kind of remember his other combustion. It's an orange color. Has been doing really, really well. So it's low and clear, but they still biting.
I was looking at the ribbit roll. Didn't that, that was in the news for some reason. I know I come across it, and I've got that fly pattern actually bookmarked here on my desk to try to tie or buy here eventually, because it's a good looking fly. Like, it's big, but it's light. I think it was designed as like a finesse topwater, right? Like you were talking about low, clear streams when you don't want to throw a big, heavy, splashy bug.
Yeah. And so John, he started them out on a one, mm-hmm. but he's tying these little ones in a number four now. Mm-hmm. And so that's just where I start every day now. Those little number fours, especially on Cahaba, I mean, you get a lot of, they kind of sort out. If you want to catch a bunch of sunfish or whatever, you can size down and you can catch all the bluegill and long ears you want to out there. But if you're shooting for higher caliber, you know, bigger Alabama bass, 10 inches and up, they can eat that number four fine. So you still do plenty of catching without having to worry about too much, you know, bycatch. You'll still get a big green sunfish or a big bluegill that's able to get their mouth around that number four. But I really, really, really like that size just because you pick up a lot more bass that way, and it kind of sorts out some of the bycatch for you.
It looks like a good pattern, and I haven't seen one in person held in my hand, but a four sounds like it would be perfect for down here. We get Choctaw bass in a drainage near me, and I've watched those little spring peeper frogs, you know, just a little plain Jane frog, cream on the bottom, green up top, and I've watched them jump off and swim across, and I've watched bass hit them. I've watched them miss them. I've watched them inhale them, and I've been looking for a good frog pattern, and I bookmarked that because a lot of times you're wade fishing here, and it's clear as those little black water streams get, you know, sandy pebbly bottom. So you don't want a big hamster size bug, you know. Don't look right.
One of the other things I like with that ribbit roll especially is it's got a blunted enough nose. If you're in a slower pocket and they want to see a little more aggressive, like you can actually still get a good pop, a little bit of concussion on that strip in. If you want to make some racket and try and wake them up and, you know, triggering that reactionary bite. But the other thing with that ribbit roll is just the hook gap and everything about the way he's got that fly tied and designed. So another part of the bite that we've got right now, the topwater is still number one. It's still super effective right now. but you're getting a lot of sip takes. They're not really hammering it. They're just coming up, even the smaller fish, they're just coming up and just sucking it in. That nice wide hook gap on that number four, you just give them a firm strip set and you got them buried.
I think that's something that never gets talked about as much. People talk about, bass blowing up on top waters and everything. I can't tell you how many times, as a writer especially, like you start writing those sentences yourself and you hit a certain point where you're like, yeah, let's try to say something different, but everybody talks about them
Right.
blowing up, explosive action, explosive takes. But my listeners, I apologize to them because I've told this story before, but I have watched bass take little size 14, 16 parachute Adamses when I was bluegill fishing. And like you said, it looks just like I've never seen a trout rise in real life, but I've seen pictures, I've seen videos, and that's all it is. Something comes up to take it, and you go to set the hook, and then once you pop him, you sting him in that lip, and then you realize you've got a lot more than you bargained for.
That's right.
It's not always explosive, and what I've noticed is that the clearer the water and slower, clear, slow moving pools like we have down here a lot of the times, I guess they're just not burning the energy. I guess they know they don't have to kill it, on a small fly. They're not trying to wound it. They know they can just eat that one and you'll miss it. I've literally had times where I was sitting there, stop to check a phone or have a conversation with somebody, and you turn and you look back and you're like, where'd that fly go? And there's not even a ripple on the water. And you're like, you put a little tension on it and there he is.
I wish I had a number to put with it, but countless fish have been caught and netted into my boat over the last, I'd say the last 6 weeks when we were doing anything other than actively paying attention to fishing. Literally just fly is out there and then, turn around to get a drink of water or like you said, check phone or talk real quick, or I'm talking about a casting tip to the client and then turn around. I'm like, hey, will you set the hook? And they're like, huh? Set the hook real quick. And sure enough, they strip into it. And then they're like, oh, that's fish on. I was like, yeah, your fly's been missing for about 15 seconds.
Yeah, that's in the conventional angling world. That's the backlash fish right there. You're sitting there and you got your frog sitting on top of the water and you're trying to pick a backlash out. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, I guess I'm just going to make a big mess. I'm going to have to reel through the backlash and just hope for the best.
And so that's a good thing to talk about. There's a cue there to understand is the first time you do that, that needs to be your reminder that less is more today. I don't have to sit here and work this fly. I don't have to, obviously just putting it out there and leaving it alone. Just let the fly work, let the water do what it's doing. Especially right now, I'm really, really heavily focused on anywhere you got oxygen coming into the system because it's still water temps are still a little bit high. It is still getting hot in the afternoons, which means we got lower dissolved oxygen in the water. So those fish are going to be loading up on those. Generally, the fish are going to be loading up on anywhere you got, water turning over the shoal where they're getting that fresh oxygen. And that's where the food's going to be channeled anyways. Like you're talking about earlier, they don't want to spend any more energy than they have to. So if they can sit on oxygen, a little bit lower water temp and have food, come down the buffet line right to them, that's where they're going to sit. The converse side of that is, whenever you're pulling, when you're about to cast again and you start pulling that fly up real quick and then all of a sudden you got fish on, that's another one of those indicator cues. If you think about it, okay, obviously they want to see this thing worked up through the water column a little bit quicker. So if I start getting hits on the pickup, now I know that's my cue. I need to start stripping in a little more aggressively. Let's do some 3 or 6 inch strips and let's string them together, maybe 5 or 6 now, and then give it a pause.
I've had something similar to that fishing crankbaits and spinnerbaits and stuff like that. Like you'll make a cast, you make a bad cast, and you're frustrated. You're like, yeah, it's not where I wanted that. And so you crank it in, you're trying to reel it as fast as possible. And if it's a spinnerbait, like it starts getting all sideways, comes up skimming to the top of the water. And next thing you know, here he comes, like right on the tail of it, and hammers it. And I had a buddy do that on a little private lake down here in Baldwin County, a little residential lake. And I was paddling him around in a canoe, and I told him there's some good bass in here, like we should catch something. It'd been slow, and he was casting a little Rapala, little inch and a half square bill shallow diving crankbait, and Wasn't hitting anything, wasn't hitting anything. He was trying stop and go. He was trying it slow. And I was like, well, speed it up. And he just wouldn't do it. You know, I guess he had a mental block. You know, it's not how he'd ever caught fish that way. Didn't have faith in it, whatever. And he finally threw it out there and he got a leaf on it or something, you know, and he was reeling it back in to clean it. And he caught what he told me ended up being his PB, biggest bass he'd ever caught. I forget how big he was, but yeah, just caught it accidentally. And then it was funny. We let that fish go, and the rest of the evening, he was reeling that Rapala in so fast it was going sideways through the water.
That's funny. What's and that's what I say. You know, you can take those as Bob Ross would call it, those happy little accidents. You know, but you can take. I mean, you have direct feedback that this is a presentation that's working, even though that was not your intent. But that gives you an idea of what's working that day, what's working on in that particular pocket. That's what those. Obviously, that's what that fish wanted to see. So there's always something to be learned, and especially with a gobber, man. I mean, I know it. I know that river. I know my sections very well. But you still have to get out there and figure out what they want every day. So you got to be. You just got to know that. Hey, I got confidence in these in this little group of fly patterns. I know that these colors work. It's going to be one of these. Now, how do I need to? Which one? And how do I need to present it? And once you dial that in, the rest of the day is just catching.
It's something similar. Steve Graziano, he's told me before, you know, and he's got a lot of knowledge on Lake Eufaula where he's from, and I swear he knows what fish are going to do before they know. But he'll also tell you theory is great, but the worst thing you can do is to go out there with an idea in your head and not be willing to let go of it. You know, he's like, go out there, try it, and if it doesn't work, you just need to go back to square one, and you just need to watch on your depth finder and just, you know, see what they're doing. He's like, they may not be doing what they were doing yesterday anymore. He said they don't read fishing magazines. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing. They just do what they want to do.
Yeah, it's you gotta have some humility as an angler, and just have an understanding that sometimes you're gonna have to work, and you can't get too bound up on one idea that you have. You gotta be willing to change things up, and then you know really just meet the fish where they're at. What do they want that day?
Absolutely. Well, I want to circle back to something you touched on earlier. You said right now y'all's water was low and clear. Is it still up there where you're at, Bibb and Shelby County? Is it still floatable, or is that getting a little rough? I've heard the Tallapoosa, last time I talked with somebody that way, they said that you weren't hardly floating it anymore.
I want to say I hadn't looked at the gauge today. I think we're around 1.8 on the West Blockton gauge right now. Canoe, you could do it. Bigger raft like mine, there's just a couple of sections that I can do, and you pretty much got to self recover at this point. We do have a couple of low water floats, but as far as like doing a big run, I would not recommend it because you're gonna be doing more dragging boat than fishing.
That's good to know. I know it's down here we're lucky on the coast, our water, it gets high and it gets low, but we're liable to have it be too high to navigate safely before we're gonna have it so low that we can't get a boat down it. And I know I drug a lot of paint and a little bit of gel coat and a little bit of fiberglass off my canoe one year on the Tallapoosa. It was an eye opener. And then this time last year I was up in Little River Canyon and I've never seen anything like that. Me and my wife been going up there for 10 years and I'd never seen the water that low. I mean, it was just the river was just a section of pools. Like you'd fish one pool and then you'd have to walk 50 yards down the rock bed to get to the next pool.
And again, it's a double-edged sword. It makes floating and dragging and all that bit, it makes that real miserable. But you ain't gotta search for fish. They ain't but one place they can be.
No, that was the thing. Like if you walked up on a pool, as long as you did your army crawl up to the edge of it and stayed low and stayed off of them, you was going to get you a couple of casts up in there, and they were going to hit or not. And if they didn't hit, you know, it no sense working it too hard. Like if you could walk up there and look at the fish, you were both looking at each other. They were looking at you, and you was looking at them.
That's right. And I think that's something that some people don't think about as much. But if you can see them, they can see you. So that's why like I was talking about earlier, you got to be careful about how you get in and out of those pools, even in or especially in the boat. Because a lot of times the only way I can get the boat through there is to go right over the top of them. Well, then you just back off to the center of the pool, hang out for a minute, you know, give them 5 minutes, and then ease your way back up. Then you can reapproach that section where it's getting oxygenated, where you know they're sitting at. And especially, I mean, Talpa's the same way, but like with the Cahaba, all that shoal structure that you can see on, you know, above the surface of the water, well, you got all that on the riverbed as well. So those fish are gonna hang out where they can expend the least amount of energy and have the quickest access to food and oxygen. So as you're looking at these runs, sometimes you'll see like a big hard current cut. Well, you just got to think somewhere in that pool is a submerged shoal, and there's going to be big rock structure, and those big fish, they're going to be hanging behind that, facing back upriver, waiting on that food to get washed down to them. So you just got to put your cast way up ahead of them. Make sure you're getting, like, if you're fishing subsurface, put that cast way up above them. That's why I fish a lot of real heavy dumbbell-eyed clouser minnows. Anywhere from 1 3/4 inches, that'd be pretty small for me, but normally in the 2.5 to 3 inch range. And you just got to cast up ahead of them, let that fly get down depth whenever it's coming through where you know that rock structure is. And that's the other good thing about fishing this time of year, and especially right now with low water. If you're not out there, you know, on these rafts and fly fishing and all that, we're not running any kind of electronics. So if you don't find that structure, then, you know, you may not ever know it's there. But when you go out and go through the grind sometimes of dragging and doing all that, but when you fish during these low water conditions, you're going to see a lot of stuff that at regular flow you would never know was there. And that just sets you up even better for spring and summertime fishing.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that because for sure the wade fishing that I do down here, and it applies for duck hunting as well. Duck hunting is really where I learned to do this, and then it took me a few years before I realized it applied to fishing. But there's no better time to be on the water if you want to learn that water than low tide, low water conditions. I learned a lot about my local stretch of river one year. We had a hurricane come in here and suck all the water out of the bay, and I mean, it seemed like it sucked 10 feet of water out the river, and all of a sudden, I just got the high. I said, "Well, I'm gonna go out in my boat before the water comes out. I'm gonna go take a look." Like the storm was past, it wasn't really rough. It was just, you know, it just sucked water out. And I drove up river around the corner, and just one section of river, like you could see. I'd been here my whole life, but with the water that low, you could be like, "Well, that's an old undercut bank that used to have huge trees on it," and I mean, there's 100 dead trees falling there that I've never noticed before, like dead trees outside bend of the river getting lots of current. And ever since then, that's been my number one flathead hole. And I'd have just never put two and two together. You know, like for me, it's one thing to see it on electronics, but to just see it with your eyes and be like, "Man, look at all them old cypress trees sitting there, just, you know, they don't rot. They're just sitting there providing structure." And
That's right.
small streams to get out there when you got to drag your kayak some, but you can really see some of the structure in those pools, and you can identify the pools. You know, sometimes it's easy when the water's high, you don't notice that there's a pool there, but there'll be a pool beneath the surface of the water, you know, running water up on top of it, and then it'll be that bowl in the bottom, and then fish will settle in there, like you said, and just wait for something to fall in that pool.
And then it's just like you said, you'll spy all this structure because it's probably been a stretch of river you've been down countless times. And you know, you're not a fish, so you don't see every little thing underneath there like they do. And then all of a sudden you start picking up on all these cues of where the structure is subsurface. And then all of a sudden you row somebody out into the middle of this stretch of river and you're like, all right, so you see that willow on the, or that sycamore over there on the side. I'm going to put you right here and you're going to cast towards it and you're going to let it sink for 8 seconds and then you're going to pull it back across. And then whenever it gets about halfway across the river, you know, out here to us, be holding on, get ready to strip set. They repeat exactly your instructions. And then sure enough, here they hook up and it's pulling line. And you're like, and they're like, you got to be a fish whisperer. It's like, no, man, I just know where they live at.
And the nice thing about fish that I've learned, fish, deer, whatever it is once you find out a little secret like that,
Oh, they're always there.
they're going to be there. I've got places that I used to fish back before I had my driver's license. Like I'd walk, ride my bike, sneak out after dark, and literally like that type stuff, you know, like sneak out the house after dark and go down to the fishing hole, you know, in the local community. And It's super specific, like right underneath that tie-tie bush right there where there's always leaf litter sitting there getting caught in that swirl. If you can get your lure right up in there, you'll catch a fish. And it was literally, I fished a bass tournament earlier this year and I kayaked into that place and there was a guy who'd walked through the woods and was fishing the bank. And I was like, well, dang, he's in my spot. And I watched him and he was casting to a spot where I'd been catching bass for 20 years. And I watched him catch three at that hole. And
Yep.
it pays off when you find, especially in small water, because they don't have that many places to be, compared to a big open lake or something like that. They can move around small streams, rivers, like they'll stick that once they find a good spot, they gonna teach it to the next generation.
If you catch fish there one time, you can almost set your watch to it. Like there is something, that's another indicator. There is something there that they like. And if one of them likes it, it's something all of them like. There's a spot on the Cahaba River. If my life was on the line and I had to catch a fish over 17 inches on the fly, I would paddle straight there and hold him up by the lip and move on. I think I pulled in 2024, I think I pulled 9 fish over 17 inches out of that one spot. And I've looked at pictures and ain't none of them the same. And I've told a client before too, hey, when we get to this spot, I'm gonna tell you exactly where to cast. If you hit that spot, you're about to pull a trophy class Alabama bass out of here. And if you miss that cast or mess it up, you're going to watch eight of them, eight trophy class fish swim underneath this boat. And I've watched it go both ways.
Hey, there we go. My luck, I'd be the one who messed them all up with a foul cast. But I tell you what, man, you've done something special. It is hard to get me excited about fishing week before bow season, but you have succeeded, and I'm sure other listeners feel the same way. If folks want to check out some of that Cahaba magic, where's a good place to get a hold of you?
Yes, sir. Hey, glad I can get you fired up on the fishing bone. My hunting bone's starting to ache a little bit too. You can find us at flyfishingalabama.com. Myself, Stephen Rockerts, Andy Witten, Richie Randolph, and you can reach Stephen on Instagram as well at flyfishingalabama. And then my Instagram, if anybody wants to message me directly, is Uncle Pete's Fly Fishing.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Visit Mississippi. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are lots of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 parks and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. All righty, guys, welcome back. Next up, we got Dip McMillan reporting in from the Mobile Tensaw Delta down here in my neck of the woods. Dip, how you doing this evening?
Doing pretty good, Nick, man. How about you, buddy?
Man, I'm good. I'm a little tired. I've been dragging some pigs out the swamp and trying to get ready to move. We're selling our house, moving back into town, and so I'm going through changes, Dip, but it's all good here.
Yeah, it'll work out, buddy.
Oh yeah. No, we're gonna be good. We're gonna move down to Spanish Fork with all the other ritzy people. Been fun. Stockton's been real fun. And it's always gonna be special to me. I know you spend a lot of time up around Hubbard's, and it's been a huge privilege to be up here for the past 6 years. So
Oh man, it's beautiful, beautiful.
that's it. That's it. Well, man, I want to go ahead and talk about this a little bit, and everybody will have to bear with us for a second because I know you was putting out feelers last week for some guides for a squirrel hunt on the Upper Delta, part of Dippy Outdoors, and I love the squirrel hunt. Once upon a time, I went every day and was really serious about it, and I've slowed down a little bit, but we've talked about it before. Me and you have on air and off air. We've talked about I got a little girl. And she went squirrel hunting with me last year. She was a year old. She's going to go with me again this year. So I think that's great. Taking kids squirrel hunting is a wonderful thing to do. Tell me a little bit about that hunt you got coming up.
Man, we've been brainstorming it, man, and it's just something just been hitting me about it. Getting the kids involved in small game, which is squirrel hunting and rabbit and stuff like that, a small game. And I can't think of a better place than in our beautiful Delta than get a group of kids up to have a good squirrel hunt. We can go by boat, or we can take them to the Upper Delta drive-in part. And I've been advertising on Facebook the last couple of days, and man, the feedback has been unreal. We're going to have at least 10 plus guys going to be able to accommodate these kids. I got a few guys come in and with some dogs. Kids ain't never hunted with dogs before. That's a good opportunity. We're going to go over gun safety. My game warden coming. He coming in to talk with the kids that morning, go over gun safety and stuff like that, and give out every kid orange hat. We got supposed to be a food truck coming. Morning breakfast, everything gonna be free for the kids and everybody participate. And then at lunchtime, shotgun barbecue coming to feed everyone for lunch. So, man, it's gonna be a great time. December 7th at Hubbard's Landing. It's about getting them kids involved, man. And if they ain't got a shotgun or a rifle, it's gonna be a few of us have extra guns. They let the guys handle for the kids. If you know. Have a kid and want to participate, just contact me at Dippy Outdoors. My phone number is on there also. We can make it happen. We're going to have every kid, parent, sign a waiver. And other than that, man, we're looking forward to it.
Man, it sounds like a great event. You do such a good job with the Dippy Outdoors Crappie Tournament. I'm looking forward to watching this one grow too. I think you're going to have a good turnout because that's a squirrel hunting special to a lot of people, man. It always surprises me every year, especially up there on the Upper Delta. There's some good squirrel hunting and there's a lot of guys show up to hunt it. And it's just different. You know, I think it's a great way to get kids introduced because you don't have to be quiet. You don't have to be still. And you're not going to mess anything up. You know, you take a kid deer hunting and they mess it up and that may be it for the evening. And it's squirrels, you're going to get another chance. You know, 10 minutes later, you're going to get another chance at a squirrel.
Yep. And just like you said, too, you don't have to be quiet, man. And you ain't got to get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you can just go out there and just have a good time and good fellowship, man. It's kind of a laid back.
That's it.
And just,
that's it.
And stuff and just being in the outdoors.
And what you're talking about, doing breakfast and doing lunch and everything, like I feel like that's something that at least on public land is kind of fading into the past. And I'm glad that you're doing it. I know some other guys do it with small game, but that sense of camaraderie, you know, having a big event and everybody meeting and, you know, sharing a meal. I mean, it goes a long way. I wish people did it more on WMAs because I feel like it cuts down on some of that competition. Things get a little tense sometimes, and I've tried to be more cognizant of that as I get a little more mature about trying to know the people out there hunting with you and accept the fact that, yeah, y'all hunting for the same animals, you're kind of competing, but, you know, y'all out there doing what you like you may as well be friends, you know, share some information, look out for each other.
Absolutely. And the camaraderie about it, man. Talk about the hunt. Or if you got dogs, talk about how this dog did and how the kids handled the dog. And just a good fellowship, man. That's what it's about, man, at the end of the day.
And there is, I know people wait for us to talk about fishing. There's actually some pretty good fishing on them creeks up there, Bear Creek and Majors Creek. I've had a lot of good afternoons where I started out squirrel hunting and then finished up with a little fishing trip off side of the bridge.
Absolutely. That's where I grew up doing, man.
Yeah, you know, they were excited. I was talking with the biologist, Jared Knight, and they actually opened up that Clearwater parcel now. He took all them signs down. You can go fish it now.
Man, I didn't have a clue about that.
Yeah, we're gonna have to load up, man. You're going to have to – I got a canoe. Come on. You just tell me when to meet you, and I'll be out there. I'll paddle you around, let you cast a little bit.
That's awesome. We definitely got to do that, Nick. And I thank you for that information, man. I didn't have a clue that happened.
There we go. Yeah, there's some squirrels out there too. You can get two in one. You can get a little float shoot and you can get a little fishing going on at the same time out there. So it's a special place, and I really appreciate that you're introducing kids to it because I hope they all grow up. I hope a lot of kids grow up and that means something to them and they take care of it.
Yes, sir. No doubt.
Well, I gotta ask, are you gonna bring that snazzy trailer I was seeing on Facebook? Are you gonna have it loaded up there at the event?
Yes, on all our Dippy Outdoors events, we're going to try our best to have this trailer on site. That's what it's for. The good Lord that blessed me with this trailer last week at the Fly High Goose, Clay Shoot, and Perdita. That organization just reached out to us and presented us with this 16-foot Dippy Outdoors custom wrap enclosed trailer, man. And we cannot thank them enough. It is absolutely beautiful, man. We just thank the community for standing behind us, man, as we bless these kids.
That's good. I like seeing that trailer. I like seeing Dippy Outdoors grow. I'm happy for you, proud of everything that you're doing here in the community.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit. I know it's the water is still looking pretty good. It come up a little bit that last we got a little bit of rain and it come up, but it went back down. I'm looking at it and we must be having low tide right now because I'm looking at mud flats out there by the Cypress Knees on Tensaw Lake. What's the fishing been like? Have you been hearing any reports trickle in?
Yeah, my buddy went yesterday, old Stephen McDaniel, and he did good. The report that I have been seeing that these fish are now starting that fall pattern and going on structure. You can should be able to catch them right now in 6 to 10 foot of water on structure with minnows or jigs. Yesterday, Stephen said the jig bite was phenomenal. I mean, he said he caught his limit in 2.5 hours. Pretty solid fish. But and I knew it was time for them to start getting aggressive. I mean, I looked at my notes and my Facebook memories. I mean, this time of the year and that fall pattern started to come, these fish is about to get thick on structure, and before they start roaming, when that water temperature cooled down to the 40s to 50s. So the bite now until the water temperature get real cold, it should be on fire. I wish I was we're getting ready to go on storm work, leaving out Thursday morning. But if I can give any advice, I would target structure from 6 to 8 foot, 6 to 10 foot, using minnows and jigs. I'm telling you, these fish should be on fire right now.
That's good to hear. You talk about how they're going to be piled up on that structure until it gets cold, and I know it's a little different every year, but in your experience, when does that happen? When does it usually start to get cold down here and it slow down a little bit?
Man, I don't know if it slowed down. My best fishing last year started late November, all the December, and the first week of January, just on fire, man. Probably, oh man, Nick, it was just. I look back through those fish and just look at the big fish I'm catching on the tinsel. Like I said, man, it's around Thanksgiving time, it's on fire, and it lasts all the way through the first, second weekend of January. And then when I stop fishing because taking the kids, I'm back and taking the kids hunting and hunting the rut, but it was, like I said, man, from November to early January, man, them fish start roaming. The water temperature get in the 50s and the 40s, and them fish start roaming, man, suspended, getting groups of 20, groups of 40. I mean, they're just thick. And last year, that dippy Tensaw Special Shad with the chartreuse tail was on fire. Now, we did a couple of YouTube videos on it, and I can't wait. For them, I'm just looking, just waiting on Thanksgiving. That when I know Thanksgiving weekend coming up, I knew where to go, man. That tinsel's on fire during that time.
Man, I gotta say, I got a lot of respect for you because you catch a lot of crappie, and like you talk about being out there in November and December and January, and there's so much stuff going on here between the deer and the ducks that how you find time, and I know you coon hunt too, and you work, you stay real busy, and you manage Dippy Outdoors. Like I gotta take some notes from you on efficiency because I have to choose. I can't hunt, fish, and be productive all at the same time. And I've been trying to do it for 15 years.
It's tough, Nick, but man, hey, it's in my blood. I absolutely love it. I love making memories with these kids. I love my coon hunt. I love fishing. I wish I can do all three at the same time, but also got a little family too, so I gotta make time for them too.
For sure. Yeah. You talk about the deer hunting. We had a guest who straight up told me he would not be doing any reports for the near future because he had a buck on camera and he had to kill him before somebody else did. And I'm looking forward to that. You talk about that back half of January down here. That's usually when I start getting real serious, is about the 15th. And then it seems like it just gets hotter and hotter until really I've killed a lot of good deer in that 10 days we get in February. You talk about getting kids out there too, man. That's something I got to put my wife on her first deer last year, and I want to do more of that. Like I think you go through stages as a hunter. Like at first you want to do it, and then you get to the point where you'd rather somebody else do it. You'd rather share it with them. And putting her on her first doe fired me up in a way I haven't been fired up in 5 or 6 years. It was a lot of fun. I imagine that's a lot of fun to put a kid on their first deer.
Absolutely, man. It's just, man, we was talking about it today, one of my sponsors, man. It's just getting fired up talking about it, man. Can't wait to open weekend, open youth weekend. Just getting it, man, it's just a feeling that you'll never forget, man, because those kids don't know that excitement until those deer get right there, man. Me and the parent be shaking so bad, can't hardly talk to them because we so open. Man, I'm telling you, I'm not a good I love the guy, these kids, but when it gets come down to it, I'm just as nervous as them. I'll be trying to talk, but nothing don't come out half the time. But that's all in it, and I absolutely love it.
Well, and the thing about kids too, what I love about having my own kid now and having friends that got kids, we all getting the age where we got kids. And the great thing about a kid is he'll get excited because it's pizza night, you know, or because you're having popsicles for dessert, or, well, it don't take much to get a kid excited. So then you think about how excited a grown man will get over a deer, and you put that on a kid, and that's just a whole nother level of excitement. And it is contagious. It rubs off. And I'm right there with you. I was trying to coach my wife through that shot, and she was fine up until she pulled the trigger. Like after that, you know, the adrenaline got to her. But man, I was a wreck sitting there watching that deer through binoculars and trying to coach her through it. And I'm happy to say I've killed enough of them. I don't usually get the jitters, but that one gave me the jitters.
Absolutely, Nick. Man, I got monster bucks on my phone. I don't put them on social media that much. I do put them on Snapchat a little bit, man. But them guys, dip, go shoot them, man. I ain't shot a lot of deer in my life, man. I'm just giving back now. I go shoot the cold deer that need to be shot, stuff like that, little scraggler buck that needs to be shot. But trophy deer that these kids will enjoy that more than me, I love to put those kids, somebody on them. That's going to cherish that moment forever. So that's what it's about, man. That's all I preach, man, is making memories that last a lifetime. And I'm just blessed to have the opportunities. And speaking of that, Nick, we have so many hunts coming up this year, man. We got a hunt over there with my buddy Paul Harrison, Andalusia. We're going to lodge a kid and his or her family. 1 week, feed them lunch, breakfast, and everything with the two or three hunts that weekend. I mean, we can't wait, man. It's going to be a good year.
That sounds like a treat. You know, there's some that area of the country doesn't get the same attention that like Dallas and Wilcox and, you know, like Sumter and Perry County get. You know, it doesn't get as much attention as the areas around the Black Belt and the Tennessee River Valley. But I've seen some pretty big deer come out of that Andalusia Evergreen area and all them big piney woods. Like there's enough woods that they can get big up in there.
Oh yeah, they got good deer over there and a lot of deer over there.
Do you ever fish that reservoir that they got right there outside of Andalusia? I can't, the name escapes me. They got a real nice state park there, and they got a pretty nice fishing lake there.
I'm going to be fishing a lake over there soon called Gant Lake. I don't know if that's the one you're talking about.
I think it is. I think that's where I took my wife there a couple years ago, and we did pretty good.
Yeah, Gant Lake got a lot of white crappies in it. A guy that helped us sponsor the kids tournament, John Fulmore. I don't know if you heard about him, but he live over there, man, and he fished that lake religiously, and man, he catch some good fish, good really? Fish. And I go over there. My buddy Paul Harrington, that cooked for Dippy Outdoors, he fish over there too a lot. So they've been telling me to come over there, and this winter I'm going.
You know, and it's something I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I've been on a bit of a quest. We got all black crappie here on Tensaw Lake where I'm at. I don't catch as many as you, but I catch them, and I've caught a few on a fly rod. But I got to catch a white crappie on a fly rod, and I may have to swing that way at some point. I got to meet a guy anyway. We're supposed to be doing a little duck hunting over on the Kanaka River, and I need to swap up in there. And then I think what we were catching, we went there because we heard there's a real good shellcracker fishery, and we caught some big shellcrackers, and that's something I like, and my wife really enjoys catching big shell crackers. She got the bug a few years ago. She caught a big one up at that Monroe County lake. And so now when she hears the word shell cracker, she it's like a duck dog, you know. They got duck dogs that you can't say the word duck because they want to go. If I say shell cracker, I got to watch it because she'll be at my elbow with a fishing pole.
Man, that's awesome. That is awesome.
Well, good luck fishing Gant Lake, man. Keep me posted. I'm sure you will. As you get in the season, you start catching them crappie. Keep me posted. Looking forward to seeing the pictures on Dippy Outdoors, all the kids on the hunts, and looking forward to the squirrel hunt, man. I think it's going to be a good time.
Oh, yes, sir, buddy. No doubt, Nick.
Sir, y'all be good.
All right, man. I appreciate you again, buddy.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Buck's Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Buck's. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, Air Medcare is the largest air ambulance network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year, or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by BucksIsland.com. Buck's Island has been in business since 1948 for all of your new and used boat needs, as well as motor sales and service, and now they have a pro-level tackle store. Boat and motor trade-ins are welcome. Visit them online at BucksIsland.com or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Also brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks manufacture a variety of metal roofing systems to meet your needs. Whether you're putting a new roof on your home or sheeting a commercial building, they have you covered. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. Also brought to you by Visit Mississippi. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. Also brought to you by, would your insurance cover an air ambulance in a medical emergency? Fact is, insurance often doesn't cover the full cost of medical flights, leaving you and your loved ones at financial risk. But with an Air Medcare Network membership, you can focus on recovery, not on finances, should the unexpected happen. Air Medcare takes care of everything, with no costs for flights when flown by one of their providers. Membership covers your full household and starts at $99 a year. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll.